My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David has a conversation with Jane Maggs. Jane Maggs is a writer from Newfoundland living in Toronto. As a playwright, Jane has been produced in Toronto, Newfoundland, and her work has been invited to be part of such workshops as the Banff Playwrights Colony and the Tarragon Theatre Playwrights Unit. Maggs is a 2011 screenwriting graduate of the Canadian Film Centre's feature film program and has been writing for film and TV ever since. She just completed the first season of the CBC drama Bellevue, for which she was co-creator, co-showrunner, and writer of 6 episodes. Jane is currently developing a couple of projects with her sister Adriana Maggs with Shaftesbury Films, adapting the popular Amy Leduc novel series for TV, and working on a half-hour comedy for CBC. Maggs' feature Goalie, that she also co-wrote with her sister, is set for a fall 2017 production. Jane is also working on a couple of new project ideas with Adrienne Mitchell, with whom she created Bellevue. We'll hear about all of this and more in Greg's conversation with Jane Maggs.
One of the main reasons that I wanted to talk to you, Jane, was I just find your writing journey fascinating. Whether it was you being at the CFC or your background as a playwright and writing with your sister, and of course Bellevue, which is the top of mind for everybody. But I was doing some research into you, and I discovered that you made headlines in the Toronto Star back on January the 1st, 2013, for something completely unrelated to television writing or writing in general.
It's true. It's my biggest accomplishment.
So that was the birth of your son. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about how the Toronto Star got a hold of you and your husband ahead of this? Like, did you have to go to them and say, hey, I'm pregnant and might give birth? How does that work?
No, it was all through the hospital. I mean, it was really down to the wire. And they were, like, you know, kind of counting down and hoping that it would take me, like, you know, a few extra seconds, I guess, to, like, cross over to the midnight of things.
Yeah.
And then it was about their PR at the hospital. They were really into it, and they're like, can we call and can we get people to come and talk to you guys? Because I guess everybody needs press. I didn't realize that before. So it was kind of like, you know, it's nice because we have pictures that we wouldn't have had before. And it was also kind of nice for my husband because everyone's kind of pays attention to a baby or a pregnant lady.
Yeah.
So, finally, someone is paying attention to him.
Well, so he doesn't get enough attention when he's on stage because is he still in a band?
He is in a band, and yeah, he's actually in Alberta right now.
Wow.
In a van, literally, right now, driving across our country. I know you would think that he gets enough attention, but. You know, not that day.
Man, the two of you have got such glamorous lives. He's in a band touring across Canada, and you're a writer in Canadian television, film, and plays.
Well, I feel like if he heard you call his life glamorous, he would laugh.
I was being a little sarcastic when I said that.
Incredibly not. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I kind of feel like my life is a little bit more glamorous than it used to be, but his is still sleeping in, you know, hotel rooms with, like, 5 guys.
Right. He's basically living like he was in college.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just, like, get your own rooms, like, splurge a little, but they're very, like, vehemently, you know, about doing it the frugal way.
Right, right. Well, that's the way you got to do it in this country, no matter what it is.
No, you do.
So let's start at the beginning. Looking at your bio, seeing that you're from Newfoundland, and now you're living in Toronto. You grew up in an artistic family because your brother's a musician, right?
He is. He's an amazing musician and just also kind of a genius. So he's like the middle child who is like everybody's favorite.
Oh.
Goes against the grain in that respect.
Yeah, because usually it's the oldest that's the favorite.
Well, I know, or like the youngest is the baby.
Yeah.
We admittedly kind of pale in comparison to him. He's like a doctorate who, you know, is trying to save the environment.
Yes.
Who's sustainable and the art. And I mean, he's just, I can't even really describe everything that he does because it's actually above my intellect level.
Well, and if you know, people that know your sense of humor can actually read the tone, can hear the tone in your voice as you talk about your brother.
Yeah.
And then of course there's your sister, Adriana, who's also a television and film writer as well.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's an incredible writer. She's very smart. She's working right now on a show for CBC, and I met a couple of the junior writers who are working with her, and I can't even remember like the string of adjectives that they rambled off about her last night. But
wow.
She's a good boss. So that's what I'm hearing.
So what was it like growing up in Cornerbrook, Newfoundland? Is it an artistic community? Are people just trying to work to get out of the community? What's it like there?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think in a lot of respects, Newfoundland as a whole is both a place that is very artistic,
yeah,
and a place that people are trying to get out of.
I think
it's both. And I say that with total love and homesickness.
Sure.
And I would love to be there if I could. And I have such amazing respect for people who stay. You have to do everything. You know, you have to be a writer and a director and an actor and a singer and you can't do one thing there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's partly why it is so amazingly creative, because there just aren't boundaries in between the different sort of, you know, factions of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really amazing thing. Cornerbrook itself is a strange place. Like, I was there at Christmas this year, and I haven't been in a long time, and I just was remarking on how much it is really kind of creative community.
Okay.
And I don't know why. It's like a mill town.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, working class, but there's like a music, sort of classical music scene there, because there's this amazing man named Gary Grimm who moved there years ago from somewhere, I don't even know where, and he just made, he just sort of, through working with kids and through working in the schools, he just kind of made this scene there. And I got to grow up around that, and I think it affects a lot of people there. And my brother actually sort of went back to build off that. So it's a really kind of an anomaly to me.
So saying that, it sounds as though you were inspired to be a creative person at a fairly young age. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess so. It depends on what you consider young.
Okay.
Sorry about that. My son is home.
That's all right.
What we also have in Cornerbrook is there's a campus of the university,
mm-hmm,
and the theater department is there. And so another, part of this strange town is that you, as a 13-year-old living in Newfoundland, can go watch Shakespeare at a university.
Wow.
So that was really a part of my, that was when I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's like a weird thing now, because these people are actually all like some of my closest friends, but when I was a kid, I remember going to see a production of King Lear, and I don't know if you know these people, but I'm sure you know Johnny Harris.
Yeah.
And Susan Kent on 22 Minutes.
Sure.
And all these people were in this same theater school, in this same production. Sherry White went there as well as an actor. And so it just was this strange moment in time where all these incredible people were in this little small town doing Shakespeare. And so it really made being a creative person possible in my eyes.
Right.
Seeing people doing it.
Right. Did you see Johnny and Susan and Sherry? Were they performing at the time and you were in the audience?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sherry was, I think, a year ahead. But
okay.
Johnny and Susan for sure. And, and a couple of other people. But, yeah, Johnny and Susan were there, and they were just so, I mean, it was just a really special class of people.
Yeah.
And so I was really, it sort of changed a course for me. And then I went on to, like, live with both of them at separate times in my life.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, so then if you say that that changed your course, what had you thought you were going to be doing then?
I don't think I knew. I mean, I think maybe a more honest answer is, like, on a level, I was always very interested in that world, and I never thought you could actually do it,
mm-hmm.
which is such a, like, kind of cliche thing to say, but I think it's, you know, cliche for a reason. Like, you don't believe that that could be your day-to-day life.
Right.
You see someone accessible doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't have been mind acting, but for other reasons.
Well, so then were you writing plays then in Newfoundland and having them performed before you came to Toronto, or was there a decision where you said, no, I've got to go to Toronto if I want to make this thing actually work?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
Like, I did a little bit because I went to that theater school, and I did a little bit of writing and performing there,
mm-hmm.
and then in St. John's a little bit as well. And then just decided before I decided to move more into writing, I decided to move to Toronto, you know, with being an actor in
mm-hmm.
mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really different experience up here than it is down there. So it was eye opening.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact of the number of people alone and the size of the city, that must have been fairly overwhelming for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think it's strange because I spent, and this is not a comment on anything, it's just the way things fall, but I think I spent, you know, the first 5 years living here only socializing with people from Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Because there's a community here, and it's easier. And I think your, like, social skill set is different when you come from Newfoundland because nobody's ever a full stranger.
Sure, yeah.
Because you have some context for everybody.
Yeah.
That was a bit of it's a very different thing.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew how you, like, met strangers. I still actually kind of don't.
Okay, so I want to ask a question, and maybe you've been asked this question before, but talking to yourself or talking to Sean Doyle, neither of you have a Newfoundland accent. But if you talk to Johnny Harris or Susan Kent, they have their accents. So is that something that you've worked on over the years and you're able to turn it on or off if you're, you know, depending on the people that you're with?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think I did do a little bit of work. My parents are not from Newfoundland. My household was a little bit different, but I grew up there and all my friends were from Newfoundland. And if I go home, I think unconsciously I slip back into it. And I like it. It's not for me. It's just, and for Sean, I mean, he certainly has access to a Newfoundland accent when he wants to.
So let's. How did you end up at the Canadian Film Center? Was that a conscious decision after spending some time in Toronto and said, you know, I might want to move into film and television?
Yeah. How did that come about? I guess I had done a little bit of theater, mm-hmm. and theater is amazing, and theater is hard.
Sure.
I remember I went to, like, look at an apartment. And it's a very small apartment, and this is not everyone's experience, but then I realized the person whose apartment it was this amazing theater practitioner in the town. I was like, oh, God, it's a really hard way to make a living. So there's partly that, and partly I was planning to do with Sherry White, actually, a version of a play that she had directed me and that I wrote. We were planning to do that as a CFC feature.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to that program at the same time as I applied to the residency program, and then I got into the residency program, and they just said, just delay doing the feature. And you know, everyone I talked to just said, this will be an invaluable experience, and it really was. Amazing place.
Yeah, every time I talk to somebody, they say, you know, that they owe their career to their time at the CFC, because you end up walking out of there with the tools and the connections in the industry and really kind of a leg up on anybody that's kind of wanting to break into it cold.
Yeah, mean, I think, yes, absolutely. I find it hard to put into words what it is for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's partly that. It's partly who you... It's partly that it's just, I think, when you meet people afterwards, there's sort of a stamp of approval, and you don't have... There's, like, one less hurdle.
Right.
Because people are like, oh, you come from a place that I respect.
Yeah.
And I think... And also, I think it just... I will say well, that's not true because I've been in... Bellevue was an incredibly busy process, but aside from, like, Bellevue production, it's the busiest I've ever been at the Film Center. They push you so hard, and I, you know, it's like, I kind of find that a really amazing thing as well, because it gives you, it just shows you how hard you have to work and how your hours are not going to be the 9-to-5 ideal.
Right, right. So who was the writer in residence when you were there?
It was, I guess it was Noah Baker. He's been there for a long time, but it wasn't, because I did the feature film program.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a bit different than the TV program.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not, we don't just work with one person every day. We sort of cycled through, because Maureen Dory was also a story editor while we were there, and so yeah, we moved through a few different people.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. So then what's, do you know what's specifically different, other than not having a writer in residence necessarily, than the film program is to the primetime TV program?
And I think, yeah, the primetime, I mean, is amazing, and it essentially mimics the story room.
So yeah.
You just go to work, essentially, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the film program is much more eclectic, and you do a bunch of different things, and you write, you know, short film, and then, because there's different components, right? So there's directors as well. So you work with different members of each, like the directors and the producers, and there's five of each.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of band together as teams, and you make, you know, a couple of short films with them, and then you make, like, a sort of longer one, and then there's a lot of master classes, and they bring in, they cycle, you know, an incredible amount of writers from the community through, and you have different day sessions with them. So it's much more varied, I guess.
You're able to, you appear to be a very nimble writer. Looking at your bio, you know, you could be working on a feature film, you could also be working on a play, you could also be working on, you know, in television. So you haven't really focused on kind of one genre. Is that because you like to keep yourself interested? Do you tend to get bored in one genre, or is it just that you like to mix up the style of writing, or is it just dependent on the ideas that you're coming up with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, yeah, I think sometimes it's the idea.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's, there are such freedoms and also limitations to both film and TV in different ways. And for me, it's like once I've like had enough of one for a little while, it's nice to be able to jump into the other. Like with features, you can go to places that... In Canadian TV, maybe you can't necessarily, maybe in American, like, you know, it's like, you, I think the ideas and the abstractness is much more open to you in sort of indie film, and, but then, you know, obviously in TV, you get to live with characters for an incredibly long time.
Right.
That's kind of my favorite thing, so I think probably that's the thing that floats to the top for me, but I also do love, I love the idea of telling a, you know, a contained story, like a film and a piece of theater is such an experience in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's kind of nothing more cathartic than that, except for life.
Right, right. Well, you know, so I want to ask, before we talk about Bellevue and some other stuff that you've got on the go currently, let's take a little break. I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast before, any of the other podcasts, but...
Oh, yeah, I think I did one time.
Oh, good. Oh, one time. Well, that's good.
But now all the time.
Thank you. So what we do is normally when Anthony and I are recording our more newsy podcast, usually we're recording at night, although mostly we've been doing it during the day now just because of scheduling. But one of the hallmarks was that if we were recording at night, we usually had some kind of a beverage, perhaps an adult beverage in front of us because we were recording at night. So we're recording during the day right now. So I don't expect you to have necessarily an alcoholic beverage in front of you, but you might have a different beverage. if this were nighttime, would you be perhaps enjoying something alcoholic? And if you were, what would it be? I can say for myself, most recently, I've been drinking a lot of apple ciders. And actually, Mark Ellis from X Company sent me a case of different ciders to try out last week. So now I'm dipping into those, and they're going to be an unofficial sponsor of the TVA podcast for the next few weeks. So I would probably be drinking a cider. What about you?
I would be drinking red wine.
Ah.
Yeah.
A particular brand?
No, I kind of got by something different every time I go, and I think maybe it's not, it's just because I haven't really settled on, it's like, you know, you have to change it up, and I haven't really sort of found something to stick with for a period of time, but I definitely find it's like, it's really the best way to bookend a day. It's like coffee and then the wine. It's like the opposite effects of these two beverages that really define my day.
Well, but so then when you're at the liquor store and you're buying your wine, are you going for a particular region, or do you just like, do you like to try different grapes in different countries and you just don't care?
Oh, this is going to sound terrible, but truthfully, I like kind of go for a price range.
Yep.
And it's not even that I, it's like, I hope my husband never hears this, but it's not, it's like, I want it to be, I feel like I'm comfortable with a wine that is like $17.
Sure.
Because I feel like it can't be that bad.
You're right.
So I will just essentially buy the same priced wine from all over the place.
Okay.
Which I know is like, everyone's like, oh, cheap, you know, the cheap wine just as good, and I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So I have that kind of like weird consumer thing of, if something costs more, it must be worth.
No, I think that's fair. I think when it comes to wines, I think a lot of people have a price range in their mind, and they kind of stick to in that sweet spot, and then that's where the labels and the funky names come in. Whether you're attracted by the price and then by the name of whatever it is.
Yeah, I think so. And a label, like something that's not too cartoony,
right?
Could pass for classy.
Right, right. So if you're bookending, if you're ending your day with wine and you're beginning it with coffee, are you a French press type of person for your coffee? Are you an instant? Do you need a Starbucks? How does that go?
I like a Starbucks.
Yes.
Or an outside the house coffee, but we also have an espresso coffee maker.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is kind of annoying when you're in a rush.
Yes.
You have like a bunch of people at your house because we don't have another kind of coffee maker. But it's too important.
Yeah.
It's actually like too important to me to not. And I've tried to drink less coffee in, you know, my, I guess, adult years. And so you really don't like to waste one on not good coffee. I like, if I'm having my coffee, it has to be like the good stuff.
I love that you refer to a coffee that you're not making in your house as an out of house coffee. I like that. I think I'm going to start using that.
Well, it's succinct.
It is. It's to the point, and you're just saying out of house coffee. It can be from anywhere. It doesn't need to be a particular brand. It's just from out of the house. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about Bellevue. Did you get on Twitter specifically because of Bellevue?
Yes. There's a lot of pressure.
That seems to be the new thing now, is I'm realizing that basically as part of, you know, promoting your project, you need to be on Twitter and live tweeting. So what's that experience been like?
Eye-opening.
Yeah.
I had no idea that this is how people watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
With like live pronouncements of how they feel or conversations with the people who are making the TV. Like, I just didn't, I had no idea. And I found it like kind of chaos.
Yes.
Like, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I was trying to focus on one thing, and then so I was feeling like the time pressure to react to something, but then like I also couldn't like digest what I was seeing because of it. So I think it was like a little bit too wild for me.
It's like a stream of consciousness, isn't it?
The Twitter?
Yeah, because people are just reacting as they're watching it and throwing out their thoughts and throwing out questions.
Yeah, for sure.
How did it affect how you watched Bellevue? Did it affect the way that you watched it, you know, having Twitter there in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, it certainly takes away that idea of, like, that, like, it's out there now, and there's nothing I can do, because it feels like you're part of it while it's out there.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's like, it makes it, I think, for me personally, more anxiety-inducing.
Oh.
Experience it with people.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, hiding.
Yeah, because if they like it and it's online instantly, then that's great. But if they don't like it and they say it on Twitter, you kind of wish you'd never read it.
Yes. But then you can't not, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you can. I guess a lot of people do.
I can't.
Yeah.
If people, it doesn't matter. If 10 people say something's great, if one person says that they don't like it, then that's the one that I think about.
I know, that's like what's pounding through your head.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't help as a writer to have that one person that says something sucks, because then you're like, oh, great, I suck as a writer. Give me more wine.
I know.
So, I've, you know, if anybody wants to go back and see the way that, you know, the way that you partnered up with Adrienne Mitchell, they can do that on the TVA website, because I've written a couple of stories about that. But, you know, so I don't want to go into how the, you know, you partnered up with Adrienne and getting Anna online, on board with you guys. But, what was the seed of the idea for you? Was there something that kind of struck you that you thought, okay, this would be a cool story?
Well, I think it was probably I think there's like two different sort of strains, which is forever I will want to explore a dysfunctional family. Like, I kind of feel like, what's the point of writing if there's not a dysfunctional family in it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I feel that, I kind of feel like that about watching TV as well, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's just, it's everybody's experience, and it's also the most intense experience of most people's lives. So that's, I think, a staple that of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the, like, sort of unique mystery of it, it's like, it just evolves as something does. Like, I remember at one point when I was at the Canadian Film Center, it was like a time when everybody was wanting to make modernized fairy tales, so we had to do like an exercise about modern fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote something about Rumpelstiltskin, because it's like dark and creepy and
yeah.
So strange.
Yeah.
And somehow it kind of turned into this modern cop story about a girl who sort of has to understand the identity of someone in order to sort of solve her life's secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that kind of was where it was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, something changes 800 million times from that idea. But, yeah. And I think the tone was born with that seed of idea as well.
So dark. I mean, you know, just not only the storylines, but also just the cinematography. You know, a lot of blues and grays, and, you know, just a very, very creepy feel. Like, you almost felt like, okay, it's daytime, so I feel a little bit safer, because I felt like anything could happen at night.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. And, you know, I kind of feel like that anyway, you know. I think that's what's a really amazing thing to be able to recreate on TV, because, I mean, it's such a simplistic thing to say, but, like, the way that I move around the world in the daytime is so different than the nighttime.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you can't believe that you would have felt certain ways at night when all the lights are on in the day. It's just a strange, it, like, allows there's some supernatural into the real world.
Yeah.
In a weird way. So we did love that. And we had an amazing cinematographer who really bought into those ideas.
This Sean Doyle kid, he seems like he's really going to do some things in this industry.
I don't know if he's got much of a career.
Now, you've known him for years, obviously, both being from the same part of the country, but also you've had him in some other projects of yours. So were you writing for Sean when you were writing for his character on Bellevue? Like, were you thinking, okay, Sean's going to be the perfect Peter for me?
Well, didn't actually know Sean from Newfoundland, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
He had left at that point.
Yep.
Like, you know, on Big Love or something like that.
Sure.
But I met him when he came back to do my sister's movie, which is called Grown Up Movie Star, and he was amazing in it. And I guess subconsciously from then, he's always been in my head. And I think, I don't know that it was been necessarily writing for him, but I always knew he was the right person for the role. And it's like... It's good, I think, because I know Sean so much better now going through this experience with him, but I also did know a lot about Sean, and I knew he's a man of many, many, many questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's really great is that if you have someone like that in your head, it really pushes you to understand and deepen this character that you're writing, because he will ask you. And also because my favorite thing about Sean is he can play, like, subtext.
Yes.
Like no one I've ever seen. And so you want to use that and take advantage of that.
Yeah, one of the great things, you know, getting back to the cinematography for Bellevue is the ability, you know, the camera moving in, you know, obviously when you guys are doing the externals, you want to show those hills, you want to show that, you know, that kind of desolation. But when you guys zoomed in on faces, whether it was Anna's face or Sean's face or Billy's face, just great stuff. You know, there's just, it's great to have dialogue, but sometimes it's awesome to not have any dialogue and just have it focus on a person's face and let them read that, let us read those emotions.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly my favorite part. My favorite moments were those. And it's only because we had a combination of amazing actors and great directors who were able to speak to the world so well. Those are the chilling moments for me, is what is going on in these people's heads that you don't understand, but they're giving you so much anyway, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, for sure. And I know Kim directed a couple of episodes for you, right?
Yeah.
He was so great. I knew nothing about him, and then all of a sudden I'm a fan.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's great. I saw him last night, which was really nice.
Yeah.
He was nominated for a WGC award.
Yes.
And he is, like, you know, aside from, you know, cinematically very gifted, he's also just a joyful person to be around, which is just really huge when you're in the third block and it's winter and everyone's angry and tired.
And
so he was a really great infusion of just, like, buoyancy. So, and he just, you know, he's so respectful and just, you know, I love everybody's work, but it just so happened the combination of him and some of the material that he had are some of my favorite things.
Another question about writing. I went to the Toronto Screenwriting Conference this past weekend, and I sat in on Corey Mandel's session, and he was talking about writing and finding a character's heart of darkness, the thing that they fear most. Is that how it works for you as a writer? Like, you know, and maybe using Bellevue as an example, you know, what would be, you know, the worst case scenario for Annie? Is that something would happen to her daughter, or that her daughter would end up like her? Is that the way that it works for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it's a more like unconscious working in terms of like defining what it like. I don't think I would have articulated that I am creating a character and this is their sort of heart of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're always. I am always very interested in what is the most. What is the thing that a character is sort of most self-loathing for?
Ah.
Everybody has those. And sort of what, how does that sort of drive you? And I don't mean that in a specific way to these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, everybody, even, you know, the happiest people in the world have these things that kind of sit inside them and drive them. And I think that, I mean, for her, I mean, I think for Annie, I think there's, you know, her fear certainly is around, I think it's a combination of her daughter and her father and you know, the fear that she is, that her daughter is going to become her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the loss of innocence that she sort of experienced, that her daughter's going to go through that and that it's going to be her doing because she can't just be okay.
Yeah, now the way that the season, you know, I'm not going to ruin it for anybody. If anybody wants to go and they haven't seen Bellevue yet, certainly go and check it out. But, you know, there was a big kind of cliffhanger ending there where somebody's feelings weren't voiced and they'd been kept a secret for decades. Was that something that you guys had, you and Adrian had kind of as a through line throughout the series writing it? Or was that something where you realized, oh, we could have this as part of a subplot, and that you thought of it kind of midway through writing?
I mean, it's a tricky one to answer, but I think we did not know that was possible until we started shooting.
Okay.
And we were sort of watching things play out.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a certain relationship.
Yes.
That we thought might come across differently than it did. This is so vague.
No, that's all right.
But it's like, you know, it's like through the way that these two characters exist together and these actors were able to sort of play off each other, a relationship transcended, I think, what I had originally thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's always the wild card, isn't it? The relationship that the actors have with one another and how that can affect the way that the story is written.
Yeah, I mean, it was very present in our experience. It was just we were watching something and just catching up to it.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, obviously, season one is done. Some people have been pretty cagey. They haven't really said anything about whether there will be a second season. And, of course, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you because you won't be able to tell me anyway. But what would you do do you have an idea in your head for a second season and what you would do with these characters? Because in some cases, in some way, I think to myself, oh, well, what could they do? Because we've already revealed so much about the relationships in these characters. So could you do a second season if you were called upon to do one?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is about unpacking some of that emotional baggage that came out of the end of the season, and I think it's complicated enough that it gives a real emotional arc for those two characters, and I think I can't even be specific about other characters because then you'll know who I'm talking about.
True.
But there's also, you know, another very important relationship in the series that will always be the heart of the show, and so I think we need to figure out how to twist that one up into the former mentioned one.
Excellent. So, So there's still a lot of emotion, a lot of relationships to explore, and then I guess you would set that within the setting of another crime, right?
Yeah, something I think the idea is, because we're aware of the small town of Bellevue, I think, you know, the most interesting choice is to, through all this sort of emotional baggage and everything that Annie had to go through in season one and all these sort of reveals, our character will make a bad choice so that it's not a random situation in a small town again.
Right.
I think we would build off the sort of complexity of the characters that we've set up, and then it just doesn't get into that, like, another murder in a 100-plot-related town.
Okay. Okay, so let's take one last break before we start wrapping up. And again, this is a question that we always ask when we're doing the TV ABCs, is what you grew up watching on TV, if you actually grew up watching anything on TV, because it's been kind of a surprising number of people that said, I didn't grow up watching TV. So I did, living in Southern Ontario, so it was Polka Dot Door and Sesame Street, and then I grew up in the 80s, so it was the A-Team and Magnum and, you know, the Incredible Hulk, and actually there's an another podcast that I do with a couple other guys where we talk about television, and I'm actually just reviewing Hunter, because Hunter with Fred Dreyer is going to be the show that I talk about this week on my other podcast. So
okay.
did you grow up watching TV, and if so, what was it that you were watching?
I did, yeah. I mean, I think we had like a limit.
Sure.
We were allowed to watch TV, and I think all the I watched like Sesame Street, yeah, and I remember one of my favorites was The Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of actually still my favorite, and I'm always trying to force my kids to watch it. I'm just not into it. They just don't care.
Mom, we don't know who Alice Cooper is, and why should we care?
I know, you like care. It's like, I mean, it's, which this is a digression, but I do find a lot of parenting is trying to force your kids to have the same life that you had,
uh-huh.
and they don't want it. But yeah, I think, The Muppets is one that I remember from my childhood. I wasn't, and then, yeah, I guess there was like, some, like She-Ra. She-Ra.
Yep.
She was like the tough girl superhero.
Yes.
Kind of like that one. Yeah.
What about as a teenager or a young adult?
Well, I guess I was a teenager when Beverly Hills 90210.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, there was nothing better than that.
Yes.
I mean, I still, like, I have like zero, like, I have a terrible memory. I don't remember, like, moments of my youth.
Okay.
I can remember scenes of that series, so... Because I have my priorities straight.
See, now, to make it come full circle, is you need to cast Jason Priestley in something.
Well, my sister has worked with him.
Yes.
And she says he is, like, the most amazing person to work with. So I definitely would cast him in something.
He's such a fascinating guy. You know, he goes to L.A. and has all this success, and now he's back in Canada starring on Private Eyes, which I think is coming back next month for its second season. But he's directing, he's producing, he's writing, and he's, you know, he's just come back to Canada and done really so much and become so involved in this industry. And to now talk to him... It's just cool to talk to this guy and go, wow, this guy had a whole career as an actor, and now here he is still acting, but also doing this behind-the-scenes stuff and working in the Canadian industry.
Yeah, I mean, it is fascinating, and I'm sure he just constantly gets asked about Brendan Walsh, and I can't imagine, like, at a certain point, I'm sure you'd want that character to die, but you know, like, he's redefining himself as much as anyone will let him.
Yeah, yeah. So let's finish up by talking about some of the things that you've got in development. Now, you sent me an email in your bio and mentioned some things, so I'm assuming you're allowed to talk about some of these things?
Well, I think I'm allowed. I think some of them are very early, so creatively, I don't know that I... have that much to talk about,
you've got a lot of stuff. I mean, it says a couple of projects, and I think it's four. So you're working with your sister Adriana with Shaftesbury, adapting the Amy LeDuc novel series for TV.
Yes, we wrote an MOW,
mm-hmm.
and then I think the idea is to do more, but I'm not sure. I'm not really sure what's going on with that right now, because they're actually thinking of doing it as a series.
Okay. So what's that been like, taking something that is already established, it's already a popular novel series, and now you're adapting that? Is that good? Do you think that's good because there is source material, or does that make it more of a challenge? Okay.
No, I think it's great. I think it's so hard at this stage to get audience, because there's just so much choice out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you start with a fan base or anything like that, it really helps with the leg up. I mean, it's like what we were talking about before. It's like a stamp of approval.
Yeah.
It's really helpful. And I mean, obviously, if you're adapting, like, you know, something incredibly beloved, people are going to be critical of
yes.
it. And, you know, but that's kind of for down the road, I think.
Can you say anything about the half-hour comedy at CBC or no?
It's something she began to develop with Sphere Media, and it's actually a you know, they take those French formats and they Englishify them.
Yes,
I just made up a word.
Yeah, I think that's a word.
Oh, okay.
That's probably not.
Yeah. So there's a series in Quebec right now that is about two sisters, and so we are sisters, So they're kind of, it gets into dealing with a struggle with mental illness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting project. I really love it.
And what can you say about Goalie?
That is a film. I mean, that is the story of a feature film that is, I think we started writing that in 2011.
Mm.
So it's been around for a while, mm-hmm. and it's been ready to go for a while. It's just it's about casting,
yeah.
And it's strangely a film that is based on a book of poems that our father wrote about a Ukrainian goaltender from the
1950s. Whoa!
I know. So it's an artistic project for sure.
Yeah.
It's like a more of a Raging Bull than a Slapshot.
Yeah.
But it dips into the hockey world. It's about Terry Sawchuk, and he was somebody who, he was like an incredible goalie, and then he died very young, quite mysteriously.
Yeah. That's amazing. Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah. It's interesting to adapt something from poems. There's some, you know, there's like a few different layers, mm-hmm. and you have sort of string throughout a story, but yeah, it's just, and my sister's going to direct it.
Oh, that's great. You know, and I don't mean to disparage any other, hockey movies in the genre, but I can do without more goons and slap shots. Like, I'm looking forward to the fact that there's going to be, you know, something serious.
Yes, it's certainly serious. And it's never going to be about who wins the game. Like, it's,
right.
That's not the story.
Yeah,
It's a man story.
Right. And then to finish off, I mean, obviously you and Adrian Mitchell have built this relationship through Bellevue. So what can you say? Can you say anything about the project you're working on with her? Or are you just kind of in the recognizing that it's a great relationship and the two of you want to work together?
I think we have ideas that we really love.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in sort of infancy at this point. But, I think that there's just, I think there's a couple of things that we didn't yet get to finish exploring, mm-hmm. that we want to explore, sort of in relationships, and that's what we're gonna do.
Thanks to Jane Maggs for having that telephone conversation with Greg David, talking about her career in Canadian television and film. And you can listen back to all the TVABC's podcasts every alternating week. Every couple of weeks, you'll hear a TVA regular podcast, which will talk about the news of Canadian television, the upcoming news, upcoming shows, the calendar of a whole bunch of upcoming episodes, all of that stuff. And then every other week, we like to play you a longer form interview with somebody who's involved somehow in the Canadian television industry, whether it's in front of the camera, behind the camera, basically on any side of the camera we can find it. Underneath the camera? Now that would probably be a health and safety issue. Anyway, you can listen to all those episodes by going to tv-eh.com, tva.com, and clicking on the podcast feed. You can get in touch with us. If you want to get in touch with Greg David, go to Greg_David on Twitter. You can get in touch with me by going to @AnthonyMarco. And feel free to support us on our Patreon page. If you go to patreon.com/TV_EH and you want to contribute $1 a month or a couple bucks a month, keep this podcast going, because you know that we are one of the only podcast sources out there that strictly talks about Canadian television week after week after week. We would surely appreciate it. We'd also appreciate any comments you have in the comments section below this podcast. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.